you guys, my strawberry plant fell. So at my apartment building, I live on the second floor and I don't get as much sunlight as I would want for my plants. I love to garden. So that's another thing about me. Check mark. That's one thing about Rhea. She loves to garden. But as I love to garden, I also love to make sure that my plants are in a good environment. So I put my strawberry plant on my railing, you know, just so it can get some more lighting. It's supposed to be hung, but I don't have anywhere to hang it. And you guys, it fell. And my heart is hurting. It's been hurting for the past 2 days, but I don't know what to do, guys. Like, I don't know where to put it, where it can get light, and I don't have to keep moving it every 2 seconds. I have to get one of those, like, balcony thingies that you can put on your railing and hang your plants on there, because I don't know what else to do. And there was a beautiful strawberry on her. And it broke off, y'all. All right, I'm done being dramatic. Hey, you guys, welcome back to another episode on Heinous Beliefs, the podcast where we break down true crime stories that are influenced by belief systems. I'm your host, Rhea, and I'm so glad that you're tuning back in today. Hello there. I just had to give you guys a bit of my random Rhea rant because some things really do be bothering me, and I feel like sometimes I need to tell somebody about it. So what better place to tell y'all random things about me than the podcast? But yeah, that was my day 2 days ago, and I've been just hurting. Anyway, I do want to say, if you're here for the first time, thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you. Welcome to Heinous Beliefs. We are a community that loves to have the hard conversations, skeptical thinkers over here. So thank you for being here. If you are not subscribed yet, you should be doing that, okay? Subscriptions are available, guys. Subscriptions are available on Patreon and Apple Podcasts, because next week you will be getting a whole extra episode on Wednesday, and then you get another one on Friday. Okay, so next week after you subscribe, the week following your subscription is going to be when you get your first Wednesday episode. So make sure you're subscribing, make sure you are following the podcast, make sure you're liking the podcast. 5 stars only, please. Thank you very much. If it's not 5 stars, just hold on to it until the podcast is 5-star worthy, okay? I am doing a lot of rambling today. I am recognizing that, and I am acknowledging that. But I do have a lot to say, so just stick with me for a little bit longer. I think, what else did I want to tell you guys about? Oh, if you want to listen to the podcast on YouTube, go ahead and do so. The podcast is now available on YouTube. It is not visual just yet. It's not me on the screen or anything, but you can listen on YouTube. The visuals are coming. It's gradual. Over time, we will get videos and get on YouTube and actually be face-to-face talking about these cases, okay? But for now, we're just going to keep it where it's at. You can listen to it. You can binge on it. Do whatever you need to do. And then the last thing is the Instagram page, guys. I know the last episode did not have a picture, so there was really nothing to go look at. I apologize for that. I'm going to try to stick with cases that I can upload pictures for, but some cases might not have pictures. I just want to give you guys a heads up for that. Well, I guess it's a late heads up now, but I just wanted to kind of clarify that some cases only have like police reports, especially cases that are on the continent, right? You know, like that don't have the same records keeping as some other places. So basically, some of those cases might not have pictures, but when I do have pictures, I will post them. If you want to see pictures that are related to the cases that we talk about on the podcast, go on Instagram and look up Heinous Beliefs, okay? All right, y'all, I think that is all the announcements that I need to make. Before we jump into the case today, though, I do want to give a trigger warning. I want to give a big, big trigger warning to anyone that's going to be listening today. There is a lot of torture of minors in this, so please make sure that you're taking care of yourselves. Make sure that you're taking breaks when you need them, or just don't listen to the episode at all. So if you skip this one. I promise you, it's okay. But if you are going to be sticking around, go ahead and grab your tea, grab your coffee, get cozy, buckle up, eyes on the road, do what you got to do. But let's get into it. All right, so for starters, we're going to be talking about Christy Bamu. Christy Bamu was born in Paris in 1995. To Congolese immigrant parents who, like many others in the diaspora, brought with them their culture, spirituality, traditional values of their homeland. His parents had settled in France for better opportunities, but they kept their connections to Congo, you know, food, language, religious practices, and all that stuff. As part of this big family, Christy was the fifth of nine siblings. Life was always loud, playful, and just never really quiet. Full of movement, there was always something happening. Growing up in the Bamu household meant sharing everything. Space, food, clothes, jokes, everything. Everything that you had was somebody else's, and even sometimes your dreams. Christy would stand out for being kind, quiet, sweet, natured and curious. Teachers at his school in Paris described him as a humble and thoughtful child. He didn't get into fights or anything like that. He wasn't really a troublemaker. He would just, you know, kind of pretty much get along with everybody if he was gonna be speaking to you, right? He was very quiet, so he kept a small circle, but a loyal circle. If he wasn't sketching superheroes in his notebook, he was outside kicking a soccer ball around with his friends or his brother. His brother was very impressionable, as well as he was, right? Both of them were small children. They were pretty much a twin flame. Even though they were not twins, they acted just like it. They made up imaginary characters, shared secrets, and even had plans one day to live in a house with a pet monkey and a game console in every room. Okay, these kids had dreams, all right? But most of the imagination was coming from Christy. He was imaginative, funny, and gentle. So when they got the green light to visit their older sister, Magli, in London for the holiday, and Christy was just so happy about this news, right? It had been, I think, you know, a while before they had been under the same roof, and they grew up together. So, you know, this was a very big thing for them to now be all together again. Magli had moved earlier, like a few years earlier, and was now living with her boyfriend, Eric Bikubi, in a small apartment in East London. Christy and her siblings imagine a cozy Christmas, you know, food, music, family, vibes, movies, and maybe even presents if they were lucky. So they packed their bags and boarded the Aerostar, made the trip from Paris to London. So when they got to Newham, this was an area that was known for immigrant communities and working class hustlers, right? It was, you know, colder than usual, colder than what they're used to. But at first, everything just kind of felt right. There were hugs all around, family. Magli made Congolese food. Eric played gospel music. It felt like home, right? But the warm became cold really fast. Eric's energy started to shift. He had a way of staring at people like he was trying to read into their souls or something. He wasn't joking. Right, when he did this, he wasn't joking, he wasn't smiling, and you could visibly see Magli get intense too. Like when he started to do this, she would visibly kind of react to it, more like shadow herself than this, you know, she's not a big sister anymore, and now she's this little girl in the corner and is pretty much anticipating the worst. The apartment started feeling less like a reunion and more like a church service. So they went on with the gospel music. Poor Christy had no clue what he had just walked into. He thought he was showing up for a holiday, but he walked into a spiritual war that he never signed up for. To understand how things spiraled the way they did, you have to understand the practice of Kindoki. Kindoki was one of those practices that were brought with the immigrant families, like I was telling you guys earlier. A lot of these immigrant families will come with their own practices, their own beliefs and all that stuff, which, you know, they should, right? So Kindoki was one of these practices. Kindoki is a deep-rooted belief system in parts of Central Africa, especially in the Democratic Republic of Congo. People who believed in Kandoki don't just think it's a spooky story. They believe it's a real active force, a kind of spiritual warfare that can attack your life, your family, your money, your health, your wealth, just anything that you were gonna do in your life. They thought if something wrong was happening, it was Kandoki. And Kandoki was pretty much, just a spiritual attack on your life, whether it was possession, demons. It just depended on who was reading you at the time, right? Whoever said, Kandoki had possessed you could now go ahead and tell people more details on your possession, whether it was a demon, all that stuff. So, and they believed that this Kandoki thing would live inside of people. You pretty much like would stub your toe too often, and they say Kandoki. You fail at your business, they say it's Kandoki. You have a child that just doesn't sit still or bites their nails, or just maybe is distant, a bit more quiet than usual, they say it's Kandoki. It was always just, some evil spirit making these children do these things. It was usually children, of course. Kandoki is not just a violent practice or something like that, right? In some Congolese families, Kandoki is just something you try to pray off, right? You try to get God to maybe protect you from or cleanse yourself through the church, but for others, it turns into suspicion, fear, and just plain abuse. Now, imagine moving to a Western country like the UK, but still holding on to these deep fears. And instead of challenging them with education or therapy, you find churches that reinforce these beliefs. That's what happened in parts of London with these people that have deep-rooted beliefs, deep-rooted cultural beliefs that they're coming with. A lot of it was not, merging with society. A lot of it is not merging with the society that they're trying to integrate into. Small, unregulated Pentecostal churches would pop up often in immigrant communities where pastors would preach about demons in your house and spirits in your children. And they weren't speaking in metaphors. They really thought Kandoki was affecting these children. They meant it literally. Now, even some of the pastors would claim to be able to see Kandoki. They charged the families so much money, and they would have deliverance sessions, pretty much like exorcisms. They used oils, they shouted, they would, use shouting, fasting, beatings. They would beat these children. But when they did this in their heads, or at least, that's what they're saying, is they didn't think that these children were the ones feeling the pain, technically, right? In their heads, because they believe in this Kandoki thing, they believe in this possession, they're thinking when they're hitting these children and beating these children and causing them pain, the coping mechanism here, or the way that they cope with this, is that they're telling themselves that they're not beating the children, they're beating the demon. All in the name of saving someone's soul. It's a spiritual cleansing here. What I think it is spiritual manipulation. Plain and simple. And this practice is what Eric Bukubi believed in, not just casually. He was consumed by it. Paranoid, obsessive. He always thought about it. That's all he thought about. He thought Christy now and his siblings had brought the evil into his home and that they were agents of some spiritual attack. He wasn't just upset with them. He thought that these children were infected and cursed, right? And Magali, instead of pulling him back to reality, would fuel the fire. Maybe out of fear, maybe out of loyalty, maybe she also believed it. But instead of being the big sister Christy needed, she chose faith over her family. Fear over facts, pretty much. And they thought that somehow they were helping these children. It started with suspicion, but it escalated into paranoia and obsession. The moment Christy and his siblings walked into that flat in Newham, Eric Bikubi was already on edge. According to the testimony from Christy's sister, Eric said he felt a shift in the air as soon as they arrived. He claimed that their presence brought in Kindoki and the old world spiritual infection he believed could travel through people like smoke. And for whatever reason, Christy was his target. Now, Christy was not a confrontational child. He usually was not talking to people. He was very observant. He was just calm and collected. That quiet nature now was what bothered Eric so much. In his warped mind, Christy wasn't just visiting, he was carrying out some kind of darkness against him because the child just was a quiet child. Within hours, things started to change. Christy's phone was taken, and then he was banned from speaking to his sisters in private. Eric started isolating Christy, saying that somehow others were already starting to get influenced by him, his siblings, right? He's saying that his siblings were getting influenced by Christy here. Now, Eric started to deprive Christy of food starting that night. That night, Christy did not eat dinner. Bikubi said fasting somehow would awaken the spirit. Now, I am just gonna call the trigger warning here, just so because this is where I guess the torture would be starting. So, just trigger warning, we're already starting off with him depriving him of dinner. So, I do know how heavy these episodes can be. So, make sure that you can take a break whenever you feel like it, and you are taking breaks. Now, it got to a point where every little move Christy made was picked apart. He was looked down on. It meant that somehow he was hiding something if he just did not want to talk. If he asked to use the bathroom, they said the demon inside him wanted to escape. He couldn't use the bathroom. His sisters were questioned over and over again, asked if Christy had ever done weird things back home. One of them, still a child, said no, and she was slapped for protecting the spirit. By the second day, Christy had been forced to kneel for hours on a tile floor while Eric shouted prayers all over him. Okay, guys, I know that I keep hammering on people just, keeping their personal beliefs to themselves and their households, but I want to correct something here because I don't understand what the thought process is here for harming a child for your beliefs, right? You believe something so hard that you feel like this demon, he doesn't see you to possess, doesn't see any of the adults to possess, but it's now going into a defenseless child, right? The one child that can't fight back when you're doing all this nonsense to them. I want to go back and say, you need to keep this belief to your goddamn self, right? Not even people in your household should be subject to this delusion that you feel like you need to carry around and spew in people's faces, try to tell people the truth. I don't care anymore. At this point, you keep it to yourself and yourself only. If you want to believe this stuff, no one else will care. Right? No one else will care about what you believe in or even find the need to question your beliefs if you were not trying to shove it into people's faces and accuse people's children of being possessed by whatever evil spirit because of whatever delusion that you have in that day. It's not simple. We can't let people just believe whatever they believe because then this is what happens. You harm children in the name of your belief. It's ridiculous. Anybody that wants to come arrest me for that, go ahead and do it. Because I'm going to say what I got to say. This is unnecessary. There's no need for beliefs in 2025. There's none. In the 21st century, in a century where we can call people across the freaking ocean, yeah, I don't see the need for a belief. I'm sorry. I don't. Anyway, by the second day, Christy had been forced to kneel for hours on a tile floor while Eric shouted prayers over him. They took turns beating him, slapping him, and even using belts on him and other heavier things. When Christy cried and screamed, Eric said it was the demon resisting. Christy tried to reason with them, like, let me go back to Paris, please. Like, I don't even want to stay here anymore. I don't want to be on holidays anymore. Eric said, no, you can't leave until you're clean. Now, Christy was refused food, he was denied sleep, and they kept him wet by pushing him into cold showers, and these cold showers were meant to cleanse him. He was also locked up in a room, stripped of his clothes, and made to repeat prayer points while being hit. Okay, he's actively being beat and he's asked to continue praying and he's asked to continue praying. Now, what was Magali doing while all of this was happening? Well, she didn't stop it, I'll tell you that much. She joined in. She would slap him, call him names. She told Christy that he had disgraced his family and that their mother would be ashamed of him. This from the same sister that he looked up to, the same sister that he came to visit for holidays. Can you imagine how innocent of a thought it is to just like want to go stay with your sister for the holidays? Just imagine how much happiness, you feel when you're a child and you want to go stay with your elder siblings for a few days. They're in their own house, they're in their own apartment. You get to do those things that you wouldn't be able to do around your parents. There's just a lot of joy about it. Like that they had been separated for so long and just getting to see them again. But he then comes here and is being tortured. Not even days later. This is the same night he got there. The neighbors later testify that they heard strange sounds through the walls, heavy footsteps, yelling, crying, and one even said that they thought it was a domestic violence fight, but nobody called the police.
By day three, Christy was barely talking. He was barely moving or even walking. But Eric wasn't done. He wanted full submission. He wanted a confession, even if it was one that had to be beaten out of this child. Christy's world had become a world of pain, fear, confusion, just plain terror. This child had no clue what he was walking into. He didn't know what he was asking for when he said he wanted to go and stay with his sister for holidays. He thought this would be a fun time. Now, on December 25th, 2010, Christmas Day, while families across London were unwrapping gifts and carving their turkeys, he was fighting for his life and losing. After 4 straight days of being beaten, humiliated, tortured, Christy's body just started to give out. This child was in a lot of pain. This child was not getting any medical intervention whatsoever. The pain was coming back to back for 4 days straight. So sit with that. The final stretch happened in a bathtub. It wasn't a normal bath, of course. It was some kind of cleansing. Again, Eric forced Christy into freezing cold water over and over again. This bathtub would be filled with cold water and he would be forced to get in it. They believed the water was going to flush out the evil inside of this child, but Christy could barely stand. He slipped, collapsed. That's where he stayed. He hit his head. He had more than 130 separate injuries, and that's not an exaggeration. This is what the coroner said. He was bruised from head to toe, his arms, his legs, his chest, even the soles of his feet were bruised. He had signs of blunt force trauma. His genitals were mutilated. His teeth had been knocked out. His lips were split open, and inside of his ears, there was blood from repeated head trauma. At one point during this experience, Christy was recorded saying he wanted to die. I don't know what spiritual being could be asking you to do this, or what spiritual being would need this kind of harm from you, would need you to cause a defenseless child this much harm. But I'm gonna need y'all to sit the fuck down and think about the shit that y'all say you believe in. Now, when he goes limp in the tub, when Christy, this child, goes limp in the tub, they don't try to help him call the ambulance or anything like that. They waited hours, hours. According to emergency services, Christy was already long gone by the time paramedics got there. And what they had walked into wasn't just a crime scene, it was a battlefield. A bathroom full with water, oils, and candles. This child's body was laid out like it wasn't even human anymore. The paramedics said his body was left like ice. One of them later told the court that they had to pause to collect themselves because they had never seen a child that beaten and battered up before. Christy wasn't just killed, he was broken down piece by piece under the delusion of deliverance. They didn't just take his life, they stole his existence and dignity one limb at a time. Now, police go ahead to arrest Eric and Magali right there and then. Paramedics called it, and the moment they realized that Chrissy's body had been, you know, mutilated and he was beyond revival, once the officers got there, they just did not need any convincing. The bathroom, there were bloody towels, a cracked tub. Do you know how hard something has to hit a tub for it to crack? Yeah. Water on the floor, oil on the walls, and it was clear something had happened in there. Now, Christy's surviving siblings, traumatized, shaking, from all these cleansings, they went ahead and told the police everything that happened. They told investigators how the abuse had started, how it escalated, and how Christy had begged for his life and begged to leave. They said Eric and Magali were convinced Christy was possessed and had been torturing him in the name of deliverance. No lies, no hesitation. They wanted to let everybody know what was happening. These kids, you know, they weren't trying to protect their family members or nothing because, well, you know, they're in shock. And I'm glad that they were in the headspace to even talk to the investigators, because those first few hours are very crucial with trying to get the details of what happened in an investigation. So I want to say these children are so brave for witnessing what they witnessed and still being able to give the investigators as much detail as they possibly could. I will never affirm adults with imaginary friends. I won't do it. In custody, both suspects gave statements. Eric himself was erratic. He was jumping from religious ramblings to science to just shutting up altogether. He would just, you know, have these moments where he was quiet the whole time. He would just jump out of nowhere and start talking about nonsense. He told officers that Christy was infected with spirits and that he was just following God's instruction to cleanse him. He was following God's instructions on what to do to Christy. Magali, on the other hand, was calm, collected, cold. She said she did what had to be done and that Christy was not the brother that she remembered. I mean, obviously, girl, right? It's been a couple of years. He grew up, right? That usually happens. Anyway, police brought in psychologists to assess their mental state. They started digging into their church affiliations, checking if other kids had been hurt, you know, off of this belief. The trial happened in 2012 at the Old Bailey. Eric Bakubi was diagnosed with schizophrenia, but the court said it didn't excuse what he did. Magali showed little remorse herself, and they were both found guilty of murder. Eric was sentenced to life, 30 years minimum, and Magali only got 25 years. Now, the UK goes ahead to launch investigations into churches that were preaching about the Kanduki. But honestly, I'm just like, why don't y'all investigate all of your churches? Because every single one of y'all somehow are teaching people that when you hear a voice in your head, it's God talking to you. So I don't know what investigation you think you're doing. Protection laws were updated. Christy's story became a warning and a call to action for the community. Christy was failed by people that were supposed to be loving him and protecting him. And all of it, every bruise, every scar, was done in the name of salvation, in the name of trying to cleanse this child, right? In the name of you serving this God, in the name of a God, an invisible God that you don't talk to, you don't hear from, you can't see, right? No one else can see but you. All of a sudden is telling you to go harm children, right? I just want to say rest in peace, Christy. I know this is not how I usually would end the episode, but you guys, this one was heavy. Okay, this one was a heavy one for me. And you deserve love, Chrissy. You deserved to be loved. Every child that we've talked about on this podcast, every time we cover children, you deserved to be loved. You deserve to be protected. And I'm talking about children here because they are the most vulnerable, right? You deserved to be protected by the people that brought you into this world. And, you know, just adults that were around you that were supposed to protect you. You all deserved love. You all deserved protection. But I'm sorry that you got pain in return. And I'm sorry that you got torture and just incompetence as a return. People have to wake up. We cannot continue in this society affirming schizophrenia and not treating it, affirming delusions, affirming hallucinations, instead of looking for treatments for people. Because I'm pretty sure this is not the first time that man has had those symptoms. It's not the first time he has talked about things like that. You know what happens when we see people like that in society? We laugh about it. We joke about it. We brush it off. Or we say, oh, he's spiritual. He's just so inclined with Jesus. Or he's so connected to his spirituality. That's what we say in society. And that's what needs to stop. We call it out for what it is. It's delusions. It's hallucinations. It's your brain playing fucking tricks on you. Children do not have to be harmed because of that. That does not give you leeway to go harm anyone because of that. No one, especially children, should be harmed because of your belief system. And there's a reason why y'all go after children. There's a reason why you rather do it to children because you know they won't fight back. They're the ones that won't fight back. They're the ones that won't say anything, right? Even when you're putting them through the worst times of their lives, they're not cussing you. They're asking you to let them go. Anyway, guys, I'm done. I'm done rambling. This one was really hard for me. And I really do hope that you guys took breaks in between, because if it was hard for me, I know it was hard for you guys. I really do appreciate you guys and all of the support that you've shown me. Thank you so much. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like the podcast. Follow the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on so you can get notifications. But yeah, guys, I'm gonna go ahead and sign off. This one was sad. I was sad before I started it. I tried to kind of pump myself up, but I still ended up sad. So yeah, I'm just gonna go. All right, y'all. I hope you guys have a good rest of your day. Drink water, stay safe. Bye.